Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are all right. We have a cool episode for you today. I am carrying on with the Oasis A to Z. We're getting through it. We might just get there. You never know. Today I'm going to be talking about flashbacks, and I'm joined by Philip Motaz, who is an American podcaster and author. So that's a really good chat. I hope you guys enjoy it. And there's not a huge amount of other news. I think this is sort of the quiet before the storm, before things really kick off at the end of the month with Liam's album coming out, and then with sort of the stuff that's going to be going on with all the live gigs and all that sort of stuff. Couple of bits. Liam did an Irish sort of comedy podcast, The Two Johnnies, which was fine. It was worth a listen. You can skip like the first, I think, 37 minutes. I saw it was like an hour and 15. I thought, oh, great. That's a really nice in-depth chat with Liam. No, 37 minutes of banter before Liam gets started. So, yeah, not that much with Liam, but anyway, it was fine. Nothing hugely different. What have we got? Liam's confirmed he's going to be a guest on later with Jules. There's a show called 48 Hours at Rockfield that's going to be on Sky Arts that they dropped a little clip of that's on YouTube. So let's give that a listen.
First time I laid eyes on Eric Cantona was when he played for Leeds. And I think we beat them at Main Road, and we've come out and he's stormed off and he's got on the bus and he's outside the Main Road and he's got the right fucking hump like the French do. I remember him looking at me going like that. You fucking God. Anyway, then he signed for United, off he went. And then he signed for United and I was going, fucking hell, I like the way he plays and that. Then I met him in a fucking club in Paris, me and my two mates who are United fans. I had a drink with him, he turned around and he went, are you one of the Gallagher boys? I said, I am. And then once come out and I seen him on Instagram listening to it saying it was his favourite song. So I got someone to call and I went, well, he'd be great to be in a video. I don't like doing videos, you know what I mean? So we asked him, would he be in it? And he said, yeah. So I said, how much money do you fucking want to be in it? And he went, I do not want nothing. I said, I'll give you something. I do not want nothing. I said, all right, let us know what fucking flight you want. I will get my own flight. I was going, we'll get the fucking flight. What hotel do you want? I do not want a hotel. So where the fuck are you going to fucking stay? You must want, we'll get you a car to pick you up from the fucking, get you a sleeping bag. I'd bring my own sleeping bag. I'll get you a car to pick you up from the fucking airport to the thing. I would get my own fucking car. We've got catering. You don't want that, do you? I bring my own fucking catering. So anyway, that was all he did. He sat there and he drunk his fucking wine, done the video, fucked off, and that was it. See you later. Goodbye, my English friend.
So yeah, cool to hear Liam talking about being with Eric. Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds released the Magic Secrets vinyl for Record Store Day earlier this month, and it's now available to download and stream. So those got a couple of tracks that were only on YouTube and stuff are actually now on kind of Spotify, sort of showing up as official Noel Gallagher songs, which is cool, which is handy, and it's just sort of good to just sort of get that done. But nothing else particularly interesting from that. So yeah, I think that's it for the news. Let's go over now to my interview with Philip Mottaz, where we discuss the classic Oasis B-side, Flashbacks. The lady, that means it's time to say welcome back to the Oasis podcast. I'm very happy to be joined today by Philip Mottaz. How are you doing, Philip?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very good. Yeah. Although the dog, podcast dog, is being a pain in the ass and he's barking away. So
yeah, my podcast dog is taking a nap between his barking fits.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll try and edit that out as we go. But if you hear the dog barking, that's just the reality of podcasting that we like to capture. We don't like to be too professional, do we?
No, not at all. This is the real stuff.
Absolutely. Good. All right, Philip. Well, thank you very much. You got in touch. I know you are a podcaster in your own right with a similar kind of that we do, the Oasis A to Z. And you actually did a Ramones A to Z and you got all the way through, right?
We got all the way through. Me and my co-host Molly and I did Ramones of the Day. Which was more of a title for the pun and not like we literally did it every single day. But yeah, we covered every song alphabetically, just like you're doing here, from the number 53rd to the word zero, all the way through. And like the Ramones, there's no comeback. We did it. We finished and we're like, that's it. We retire and we're done. Right? Half the members are dead. So we're like, there's no news. So we finished.
Fair enough. And is there anything in the archives, do you think? Are they going to drag out something and then you have to bring it back or do you think it's all been used up over the years?
A lot of it has been used up, but there's one sort of chestnut out there. That is, if they ever do a reissue of the album End of the Century. And to put it into Oasis context, this is when they went big. This is sort of their Be Here Now, where they worked with Phil Spector. It was supposed to be like a comeback for him. And we all know kind of how that played out for him, for others. And it wasn't the biggest hit they wanted, although it was a relatively large selling record. And part of the lore or legend about it is that it feels more like a Phil Spector album than a Ramones album. So I think there is talk out there of maybe getting a reissue of that. That would probably be the only real big, like, landmarky thing that they could possibly pull out of the archives at this point, I would say.
Cool. And that's the one with Baby I Love You and
it, yes. Isn't it?
Yeah. And yes, that's it is. Isn't that like famously that he spent like 3 weeks recording one drum sound or something? That's the legendary tale.
Drum sound, and supposedly Johnny Ramone was driven, he just left after a while because he was asked to play the opening strum to Rock and Roll High School like 100 times. And I mean, it's just literally that D of brown. It's like, nope, gotta do it again. Drove everybody nuts. And yeah, there's lots of stories. There's so many stories around that album. It was a bad idea sort of from the beginning that is endlessly fascinating. And I can't believe there aren't like more movies about it.
Wonderful. All right. So, well, you've established your Ramones credentials very well there. I say, yes. Just to give you a heads up, I'm a classic sort of the best of the Ramones kind of guy, you know.
And sure.
there's a brilliant moment when, you know, the actor Martin Freeman from Sherlock and
yes.
Bilbo Baggins and all that. He's like a real music aficionado and, you know, a proper mod. He was being interviewed by this TV presenter, Tim Lovejoy. I think it might have been on Soccer AM. It might have been on the other show.
I think I've seen this, yeah.
Have you seen
and
this?
He's wearing the shirt. Tim's wearing the shirt, right?
Exactly,
classic logo.
Yeah, and yeah. It's that classic shirt. And that shirt was massive. Same as like Motorhead and Metallica and Ramones. Yeah. That you could buy it on like the real crappy like high street shops mm-hmm. in the UK. And it's like, and he calls him out on it. I think does he say, what's your favorite album then? And Tim's like, the best of the Ramones.
Well, he also says, like, name one of the members. It's like, you can look at your shirt even if you want to.
Now, I also heard
now, your T-shirt,
yeah.
Ramones.
You like them?
Can you name two of the members?
Well, they're on the T-shirt, so it does help. Do you think I've just been done?
Doesn't count.
Why?
Can you name two albums?
But you might not.
No.
I'm just saying.
Listen,
just
when
saying,
I when
now,
when we
I find just think funny because everyone's got a Ramones that like all of a sudden out of nowhere everyone fucking loves the Ramones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Every fucking loves the Ramones.
Yeah.
Where the fuck did that come from? Like all people going, yeah, Ramones.
Is that
can
a bad
you name
thing?
An album? No. No. I met a girl who had an Elvis Presley T-shirt. I said, name five Elvis songs. Heartbreak Motel. I don't know. I mean, what's you know? Would you put Hitler on a T-shirt?
Yeah, I remember that clip. Is that like a bit of a legendary clip in the Ramones?
Yeah,
world,
yeah, then? It came up. That I love that one. And if anybody wants to spend, I mean, there's lots of, they were just lunatics in the best and the truest fashion. But one of my favorites is when they did the interview show Regis and Kathy Lee. And this is the Ramones on like a daytime talk show. And it goes okay, but you can tell it's like, they might as well be from Neptune. You know, it's like they are not. Regis and Kathy Lee are from one planet and Dee Dee effing Ramone is from another galaxy. And
yeah.
it just looks so strange. It's beautiful.
Fantastic. Well, look, you've yeah, absolutely. And so it's one of those when I sort of yeah, when we made contact, I thought, you know, I must dig into the Ramones. They're another one of those bands that like I really love. Pretty much every song I've ever heard by them. I've never heard a Ramones song I didn't like, but I've just never delved in. You know, I've just assumed that, you know, well, no. It's kind of if, you know, if you've heard 10 Ramones songs, do you need to hear the other 100 or so? What do you reckon?
I mean, they definitely have a sound and to that same, like to aliens from outer space, they kind of all are largely about the same, except for that Baby I Love You. That's probably the one super left turn. But there's some nuances in there. And there's definitely some deep stuff, you know, like archive stuff, like Too Tough to Die album is a really good one. But similar to, I feel like I had a similar trajectory with Oasis where like a lot of people, very similar thing that happened with the Ramones is nowadays people are like, oh yeah, the first couple albums, you know, and they don't go farther, and some people don't even know that there's farther and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I was much on the same coin when I was like, oh yeah, I should probably get around to them sometime. I liked those first couple albums. Well, and then and yeah, you don't, and you move on with your life. That's adulthood.
Yeah. When did you first hear Oasis then?
I first heard Oasis. It's funny. I was exactly about the right position to do it. I was in college and the video for Live Forever came on. And this was the first time I'd ever had MTV. So what's that, 1994, 1985, something like that?
Yeah.
And I remember kind of sitting up. I was like, I enjoy this very much. And but then I was sort of a poor college kid. So I didn't like have a lot of money to spend on albums. And yet I eventually got a job at a record store and that allowed me to get used CDs.
Okay.
Which is a big deal. But I kind of like hung in with them. And then when Morning Glory came out, I always joke, it was like you could walk down the hall and that it was playing everywhere. It was just every single room, every single room was playing that. So I was ideally positioned to experience them at sort of like their big bang, but then also have the like all too American experience of like, you know, kind of letting them drop off my radar and then not hanging on to them so tight, just because it was like, well, they're not big here, so I don't know what happened to them. And then you'd have to like actively follow up with them. And I gotta admit, I didn't work that hard for a long while until I have a friend. I live in Los Angeles, California, and I have a good friend who is a musician and went to all these shows, and like he saw them on their first tour in Los Angeles and speaks rapturously of it. And for a while I was kind of like rolling my eyes and was like, yeah, okay, I know those guys, whatever. And then for some reason he like finally wore me down enough, and then I did something that worked for me that got me really into them. Was one, I listened to them much louder than I was before.
All right.
Which sounds weird, and it kind of works for a lot of stuff, but like if you literally play it on a big giant speaker, it's like this sounds glorious, or like in your car or something, super loud. That helped me a little more. And then honestly, playing them sort of in isolation, because oftentimes I don't think, I mean, present company excluded, I doubt many people listen to one band all the time, you know, like nothing but it helped me to sort of, this is so corny, but it was like I made a little Oasis where if I just listen to them, it's like you just kind of buy into them, and then you just have them. And then I don't know, then something or other clicked, and I've been digging into like the post Oasis stuff more. I really like Liam's two solo records quite a bit. I was more honestly it surprised me how much I've enjoyed them. I was like, oh yeah, I was ready to I have this real like write them off, and then you know, then I eat crow after a while to realize, like, oh, maybe I should shut up and actually listen to it. So it's been like a weird road for me. I was on ish and then forgot about it, and then like willed myself into being into it, and then I was like, oh yeah, sure, this is great. I don't know why, what was I doing for 20 years?
I know what you mean, and that's like having your Oasis is interesting. Yeah. And when you're right, when you just think, you know what, I'm just gonna go in and listen to this person, like I was doing it with David Bowie recently. I've just thought, you know what, I've never just done, you know, Spotify must have a chronological everything he's ever done from start to finish. I thought, you know what, I've never done that. Yeah, I've listened to probably all his albums at some point, you know, on and off, but I've never just gone right from like the early days of the, you know, the Davy Jones stuff all the way through. And when you, it's funny, when you go into a band and you just go, oh, that's, I'm just going to live in that band's world. When you're in that world, you're like, I don't want to leave this world. You know what I mean? No,
yeah, you're right.
It's almost comforting, and it's almost like, but it takes that choice away as well. I think there's too much choice now. And you're just like, well, no, I have to now that listen to Loving the Alien, even though it's a shit album, because I've reached 1983 or whatever.
I have signed up for this. Yeah, part of that too with Oasis was one of the things that kind of like was attractive sometimes and also put me off other times was I just noticed how often they, particularly the Gallaghers, talked about how great they were. And then I was like thinking about like, do they say that more than anyone else about that? Like, I just thought about it. And it was like, for a while, again, it was like sort of putting it off. And then thinking, I was like, what if I just take them at their word for a minute? And like I say, then you make the Oasis Oasis and say like, okay, if you exist in a bubble where only this happens, that you are already predisposed to enjoy in some way. I like this type of music. I was like, well, then what's the worst that can happen? And yeah, I came out better. Like, and so now that stuff has like creeped into my rotation quite a bit since then. So I'm glad for the Oasis Oasis.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. It is funny as well. Like, you know, compared to someone like Bowie, or, you know, I'm not a big Radiohead fan, but Radiohead always get heralded as this sort of special band that are on another level. And which is fair, you know, which is like, you talk about jazz, or you talk about classical or whatever. And then, Oasis has got, it doesn't have the same levels of lyrical complexity. It doesn't have the same tonal changes or such these things. But what it does have is, it is just, to me personally, it's comfort food. It's just like, you know, it's every song. Well, not every song I really enjoy, but, you know, 99% of the songs I can just really enjoy. There's loads to get into. I don't have to work hard for it. I know it's just going to be a really, really good time in your ears.
Yeah. No, I agree. This is a bit of a stretch, but it kind of applies to the Ramones too. I guess the author Stephen King, two of his favorite bands are actually the Ramones and AC/DC. And somebody was complaining and was like, why do you like AC/DC? All their songs sound the same. And Stephen King's answer was, what's your point? It was like that in those cases, I get the feeling that these people found something that they like. They like the noise of it. Even just thinking about the noise that those guitars, this vocal, this drum that makes, they're kind of like, yeah, that's great. Why would we go away from that? And I mean, to your point, it was like somebody like Bowie and Radiohead. Yeah, totally. Go for it. I mean, that's your thing. And it's like, not everyone is David Bowie and Thom Yorke. Mm. So I guess we're going to have to make do with, like catchy melodies and fun rhythms. You know, like that's not a bad place to be. I get it. I that sort of like, it's almost like the way that music criticism talks about those things is like, I like Radiohead fine, but I think sometimes they get that sort of boost over these other bands because they kind of give a critic more to write about. Whereas it's like, I don't know what you're supposed to write about cigarettes and alcohol. You're not really supposed to. You're supposed to listen to it. Yeah. You're just supposed to jump up and down to it. And we're like, yeah, that's it. It kind of is, beyond that in a way in those cases.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. Well, look, we're here today because we're doing the A to Z and we have got two flashbacks.
Yeah.
Which is a B-side of All Around the World from the Be Here Now era, which is also known as the best era.
The best era. The top.
It's not necessarily the best era, but listening back to this, I listen to it. This is a song that I'm always happy to listen to. And it's always, you know, when we've done the knockout tournaments and the things like that, this always is one that I have a special place in my heart. It's not in my top 10, not in my top 20, but, you know, I just think it's so, so well produced, so huge. And really, this to me is one of those things that sums up the Be Here Now era, in that it's this is a B-side, and yet the level of recording and the time and the effort that's gone into the production and the, you know, all of the elements to it, it's just like, Christ, they must have spent so much time and money on this song, and yet it's the B-side.
Yeah.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture. Luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Yeah. This was my first time hearing it. Actually.
No way.
You bringing this up. Yeah. So Be Here Now was the first Oasis album I bought new. Does that make sense? Like I picked
as I was working this. Out,
yeah. As it came out, it was hyped up everywhere. I'm like, yes, I will do this. And I remember mostly enjoying it and then sort of cooling on it. And now I'm sort of like, okay with it. And sort of to your point where it's like, it is that sort of comfort food where there's things you could criticize about it, but if you like this type of sound, here's 79 minutes of it. Here's an enormous document of it. It's like, it's not, I mean, for some people, I'm sure it is like a pinnacle, but anyway. But yeah, I had only had the album proper and I'd heard like some of the B-sides and that sort of stuff. But then, yeah, when this came up, yeah, the most 90s thing to put an X in it. I don't know. I know I wouldn't put it in my own Oasis top 10. And I don't know if that's evident of my, like the level of fanship with me. Or if it's just proof that I was like, I think I'm a Liam guy. Like I generally like that guy's voice a little more. Sure. And it tends to feel to this uneducated listener more like Oasis when to use it loosely, the whole band is in there, him and everybody else. I mean, there's obviously exceptions, but
sure.
Yeah, something about it. I'm like, I don't know. I'm glad to hear you like it so much because you should, because you're in it. You're like married to it. but I also agree with what you're saying. It was like, it, even for like a tossed off B-side that I'm not crazy about, it is like a huge level of production.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. I mean, and one of the things I really love about this, which you've probably not clocked then from how you have come to it, is that when it was released on the All Around the World single, All Around the World is a single. The Fame is the song that's like before it, and then it goes into Flashbacks. And as the Fame fades out, Flashbacks comes in. So the first, yeah. So you've got this sort of first second of Flashbacks is like, whoa, that was a weird little sort of fade out and drums. And it was like, yeah, that they would actually tailor the B-side to be like an EP that runs together.
Yeah.
You know, and they did a similar thing.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that because it is on like the special super deluxe edition I was listening to. I was streaming it. And yeah, I thought the same thing. I'm like, are they crossfading like the demos on the B-sides? Like, I don't, did you have to do that? Oh yeah, you're right. It is a funny amount of, I mean, I'm breaking no new ground here, but it is like, there's many things to say about Oasis and one is about the B-sides. And I guess that's one that I hadn't picked up either, was like, there's production value between the B-sides.
Yeah. Like, yeah, so they do the same thing on the Stand By Me single as well. Did you know what I mean? Single, that songs fade into each other. And it's just like, you know, that they were truly like crafting EPs, you know, and proper EPs that are built like EPs that when they came out on CD single over here.
Yeah. But, yeah. It's still intact. I'm glad you said, yeah, that was low key annoying me, not annoying, like, but I was hearing it and thinking like, what's happening? Like, I didn't quite understand, like, but I just forgot about it and went on with it. But yeah, I'm glad you said that they've maintained that integrity in these versions. So that's interesting.
And on the Be Here Now special edition, that's the, you know, the Spotify playlist, the fame is before it as well. So it does work. You know, they haven't put it in a different place. Yeah, so it does still work. It's not like, you know, when you listen to, I listen to the Beatles on shuffle. And if ever, when the single Abbey Road tracks come on, you go, oh, no, so wrong. That's horrible.
Yeah. I remember my buddy and I would always laugh about how when that Led Zeppelin 4-disc set came out, they left off Live and Love and Made.
Oh, right.
Which was like, that's what that song Heartbreaker goes into. Like, did nobody tell you guys? That's what you, why did you do that to us? And like every classic rock station plays it this way, and you just decided middle finger to you, no chance. So yeah, I'm glad the B-sides were maintained. That totally tracks. If you put that much effort into your B-sides, that when you're releasing like the super edition, we're like, hey, keep that together. We put a lot of coke-filled hours into this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, look, let's look back at the lyrics. So, well, just to clarify, so this came out as the B-sides were all around the world. So this was like the last set of songs written in this Be Here Now era before he then goes off and, you know, and then they go off and take a bit of a break before they come back, and it's the whole new Oasis Mark II kind of era. Yeah.
Was this the last single too?
Yeah. All around the World is the last single of this era. And then you've got, so it's not the last thing Brian Cannon did with them, because Brian Cannon came back to do the Master Plan. Same as Owen Morris. It's the last thing Owen Morris did with them. This is the last kind of hurrah of Oasis Mark I.
Okay.
And All Around the World went to number one, which was very cool and very exciting at the time. And so living in the UK and being like, you know, 17 when this came out, this was really exciting because, you know, it was the last chance to get a couple of songs before we knew they were going to go away for a while. Yeah. And so, yeah, to get this one and the fame, especially, I really love. So, especially.
I think I do prefer the fame a little more to this.
Oh, yeah.
I labored with this for a long time, because I know the territory that I'm in and I know the words I'm going to use. But at the same time, I'm going to stay true to my show, which is the punk show, and say something that is potentially inflammatory. The Flashbacks reminds me a little of Nickelback.
Oh, right. Okay.
Just a little. And I know those are fighting words, so everybody settle down. But it's a little bit like that. It's got a little bit of that, like almost country rock twang to it. And I think Noel's voice like inhabits that a bit more.
And he's playing up on that in here. You know,
oh, definitely.
Ask me,
yeah.
Matt. He's got, there's definitely a country side to his voice.
Yeah, it's like, it's the best version of a Nickelback song that Nickelback wish they'd recorded, but I still get that vibe. I'm not saying it, I'm also not slagging too much on them because everybody settled down, but it just like kind of took me aback for a minute. You know, I was like, Oh, okay. I want a new tour bus full of old guitars. Mine star on Hollywood Boulevard. Somewhere between Cher and James Dean is fine for me. So how you gonna do it? I'm gonna trade this life for fortune and fame. I'd even cut my hair and change my name. Cause we all just wanna be big rock stars and live in hilltop buses driving 15 cars. The girls come and the drugs come cheap. Well, I'll stay skinny cause we just won't eat. Me a little while to place it, even though I was like, I just listened to an hour of Oasis. I know this is them. but just for a minute, I was like, oh yeah. I wonder, so they wrote this later, but was it ever in consideration for the album proper?
Don't think so. Yeah, my understanding is the set of B-sides were then written and recorded separately. So as I say, someone might correct me on that. I'm sure David Huggins of Oasis Recording Info may request me, may pick me up on that. But no, my understanding is, yeah, these, this was like a separate little recording session for these, for this, The Fame and Street Fighting Man, which was the other, the cover that's the fourth track on the single. So
that's interesting. I wondered, I was imagining in my own head that was like that country thing. It was like, oh, we already got that with Fade In Out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we don't want to do too much of that. So already got that there. So, you know, we could keep that over there. But yeah, that's more interesting that they're like, oh, we're going to come in and write new songs.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, they would often do that. They'd often have like an extra little session for the B-sides. And I think it's very clear here with the fact that Noel sings both of them, The Fame and Flashbacks, that probably, you know, maybe Liam couldn't be asked with that recording session. So yeah.
Unavailable.
And, you know, and like you say, you know, it is, you know, a lot of people agree with that point, and I do agree with it to a certain extent, that, you know, it's never quite Oasis without, you know, without Liam there. And I don't mind Noel too much on the B-sides, but I really don't like Noel being on the singles and on the album as much. I think the Oasis, the band, should be Liam most of the time.
So we had a similar conversation. My co-host Molly on our show asked, how many Ramones does it take to be the Ramones? Because they started with four, and they ended up with, you know, they lost a drummer, they gained a drummer, they lost a drummer, they lost a bass player, whatever. So I was thinking about this with Oasis too, of like, how many Gallaghers does it take? But I was actually thinking of it in terms of the ever-present reunion talk, of the idea of like, is this the era that it would have to be for people to say Oasis is back? Or is it literally at this point, if we can get those two together and then three other dudes?
Yeah.
Like, I think people would take that scenario, but I think everybody would hold out for Nebworth, you know, like, can we get them back? Those guys are all. Yeah, don't you think? No. I mean, is that how you would feel? I'm putting you on the spot, but is this is the picture you have of them?
Yeah, it's really difficult because there isn't, you know, you just know that there's certain people that wouldn't do it, you know, like, and when you've got such clearly defined eras and clearly defined, you know, effectively Mark One and Mark Two, plus then you've got the Tony and Alan situation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, Gwigs just isn't going to do it. You know, that's so that sort of writes him out of it. And then, and Alan, we always said definitely wouldn't do it, but then Alan's been sort of reappeared on Instagram in the last sort of year or so. So, you know, maybe Alan might, you know, that might resurface. And then, you know, Gem, and obviously Gem is with Noel's band, and Chris Sharrock is with Noel's band, and then Bonehead's with Liam. So you know, those guys are in and around the world of the Gallagher brothers. I don't think it, to be honest, if you've got Liam and Noel together on a stage, like, that is Oasis, you know, that's fine.
I feel like, they're the only two, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And even to us, I mean, they are the only two. Well, I suppose Noel is officially not an ever present member because he wasn't at the first gig, but then he was after that. So yeah.
Except for the first gig,
Noel and Liam are the only ever present members. So, you know, and to be honest, that would be fine. Liam and Noel with session musicians would still be Oasis for me.
It seems like publicly too, that would be, I mean, that's the headline.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the headline, to have those two together. And, you know, and if you remember, when Noel left Oasis in 2009, Noel left Oasis, and there is a chance that the remaining members could have said, right, we'll carry on. You know, he's left, we'll carry on, like on the Beatles Get Back. Well, we'll get in Clapton, you know, that's it. Fine, we'll keep going. Just get in John Squire, you know.
Yeah.
And that would have been Oasis. Would it have been Oasis, really? No, you know, it would have been
it feels like you're verging into the Mike Love is the Beach Boys. Yeah. Yeah. Era was like, yeah, but Brian's not here, and he's a major player on this, in this artistic endeavor.
Yeah, or like, I've sort of read, like, oh, Pink Floyd are getting back together for this Ukraine thing. I was like, really, are they? Well, not Roger Waters. Well, it's not Pink Floyd then, is it? You know, that's just just Dave and Nick. That's not Pink Floyd. But anyway, we digress. So yeah, I I think I did at least it's come up before, like a, you know, a discussion of, okay, well, who would play the bass and who would do this and who would do this?
Sure. But
as I said, it's all a moot point because it's not happening anyway. So there you go. Let's look at the lyrics, shall we? Because this is an interesting lyrical song, I think. I spend my time sitting on the fence with a mate of mine, trying to write the line of this story. We believe that everything said is a waste of time because life is well tried and it bores me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's a really nice way to get it started. Yeah. I generally don't like songs that talk about writing songs.
I was gonna say it almost sounds like he's literally describing what they're doing.
Yeah,
like at the moment. But yeah, you let it go.
Yeah, because he says, because life is well tried and it bores me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I like the on, you know, and because it's got such a lazy. It's like a lazy drumming feel to this one.
Yeah.
And it almost sounds like his voice is slowed down. I don't think it is, but you know, it's like the Beatles' Rain or something, you know, it's almost like it's dragging a little bit. And
the whole thing is a little bit of like a slow shuffle as opposed to a attack.
Yeah, exactly. And exactly. So I kind of like that because it's like a sort of a stoned, and it is a flashback. It is thinking back. And Noel, I've said this 100 times on the pod, but you know, it is, Noel is so good at that nostalgia and looking back and thinking back. And in this, you know, even in his first few songs, you know, like Fade Away, he was already kind of looking back. So, you know, that's probably is one of his strongest points for me. And so, and this is a song where, you know, where he definitely does that. You know, he sat there with his mate. It's just a nice image, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I do like how it kind of goes from like sort of a pleasant idea to a, like a cynical one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I was sitting here with a buddy of mine and we were talking about how life is worthless. Like, whoa. Okay.
and then we go. So that's a nice little verse, you know, just a 4-line little verse melody. And then we get into this sort of, a middle eight that's, or a bridge, whatever you want to call it, that's sort of, this is now we're getting into sort of a bit more psychedelic-y. In my well-paid opinion, which I think is a great line, my well-paid opinion, you know, these things, they really don't matter. But from my crystal gazing eye, and then we get that crunching in guitar at that point, there shines a light like dynamite, and then a big Alan White drum fill, and then into the chorus. Sitting on a throne, we'll give a bad back to you. Living on my own was like a flashback to the days when I was lost and lonely. And I love the way he does days when I was lost. I don't know what it is about that line, but that's just so brilliantly put together, that the way the melodies is so lazy and it sways. You know what I mean? I can't quite put my finger on why, but it's just brilliant.
I don't know if I can either, but I do like, and I mean, it's not so unique to Oasis, but it is something that they do really well, which is like find, it sounds so dumb, but it's like find ways to sing words.
Yeah.
You know, like I sometimes hear it in bands where it's just like, you are kind of just saying a bunch of words, like you're singing them, but you are just saying them. And sometimes, like you say, it was like, it's just stretching out vowels sometimes.
Mm.
And sometimes people do it lazily, and other times they're just like, yeah, that's an effect. That is it. You have, this is an instrument you can use your throat to make another instrument. So yeah, it's all part of the thing. And I am less of a lyrics person than I am like the feeling and the sound of it person.
Sure.
Even in like hip hop stuff, I prefer the way it sounds rather than what they're actually saying. So yeah, no, I totally get it. I think he knows that too, you know, that Noel knows that too, that it was like, I'm gonna like, you give it a little extra something. So it was like, well, it's a singy song. We're doing a singy song.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. And he's very good at putting those, as I said, those, it's just the words that just sound great. You know, it's like the example I've used before is Beck. Beck's very good at that. You know,
I was going to say this era, the, like, you know, it's funny to think how they were contemporaries, but I think that was very much a thing going around the 90s of just like, how do you make interesting words sound interesting next to each other?
Yeah. And if it doesn't necessarily have to mean a lot, but it's just that they just sound great where they are.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be a short story, but I love it. And then we get into saying what I said was just a different story. All your lies, well, they still bore me, which has just got that great kind of snarl to it. That could be a Dylan line. There's nothing wrong with my world. These things, they really don't matter now. And then we get into the, you know, back into the second verse, which is, and this is sort of lazy Noel really, where he just kind of repeats the first verse, but just sort of changes around a few of the lines.
But that's also like that buddy of mine I mentioned at the beginning who went to all these concerts and is like a devotee to the band. It was like, he pointed out, it was like, that's most of their songs.
Yeah.
It was like, they do that. I mean, that's also part of why I think it's helped them to become so big and become like a stadium show is, you know, you can catch, people can catch, this sounds like a slight and I swear it's not, but it's like people can catch what the chorus is and sing the chorus back.
Yeah.
You know, it's harder to do we're bagging on Radiohead. I'm so sorry, but I mean, it's harder to do to Paranoid Android, you know, and like there's no na na na's, there's no yeah, yeah, yes. You know, it comes into play. I totally respect it.
You know what? Until I was today days old when I realized that the first line of the chorus is sitting on a throne will give a bad back to you. I always thought that was sitting on a throne and giving flack back to you. That's the first time I've ever seen it. Sitting on a throne will give a bad back to you. And I think that's brilliant. Like, that's a great lyric. Sitting on a throne will give a bad back to you.
That's almost a good enough idea that it could have been its own song.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's a good line.
That's brilliant. Sorry, I'm a little bit taken aback by that.
Well, you're mining this for everything you got. You have to celebrate the moments when you yourself, James, learn something new about the band.
I know. It doesn't happen very often these days.
It's great.
And then just look at the chords. It's actually quite it's one of those Oasis songs that's got quite a few bits and pieces going on. It's not like a four chord wonder. The verse is A, G, B minor, D, A, G, D, A, G, B minor, D, A, G, D. And then the bridge, in my well-paid opinion, B minor 7, F sharp 11, G6, A sus 2, F sharp 11, G6. And then there shines a light like dynamite. It goes to the A and E. And you can almost hear that he's ramming the open chords. You know, there shines a light like dynamite. And A, E is just such a fun kind of, you know, easy thing to play.
I forget. Do you yourself play guitar or instrument?
Not really. I know what A and E are. F sharp 11 and G6. I haven't got a clue, to be honest.
That was part of why I asked, because I play a little too.
Yeah.
But I'm also of the mindset of like, if I see G7, I'm like, G.
Yeah,
like I can do G. And so I sometimes I marvel and I'm almost suspect of bands. They'd be like, oh no, this one's like, you know, with a sustain this thing. I'm like, come on. You're like for one strum, you're gonna do it.
You know? Yeah, you're like, really? How do you even?
I feel like that's an accident. Like, come you on. Can't tell me Tom Petty cared that much about that part. You know, like all that stuff. I appreciate the detail, but I was curious. Like,
yeah, no, I can play a few open chords, but no, I struggle with bar chords even. So yeah, and then the chorus just is then quite straightforward. I could play this because this is like talking about bar chords. This is just handy down up and down on bars. Sitting on a throne, we'll give about, that's B, E, B, E, F sharp, and then G and A for the days I was lost and lonely, and then B, E, B, E, F sharp, G, A, G, A, E, and then G, A, E just through to the end. So that's quite a that's quite a fun little sequence to play, I think, actually.
Definitely.
And I think what you've got here is like a mixture of open and bar, and I think you can hear that in the way this song's edited. It's almost like it is, there's like almost like bad edit points. You know what I mean? There's even that bit where it's got like a little ding like that. It's almost like, wow, hold on. Is that supposed to edit there? Or is it just like, oh, sod it, that section ends, now new section. You know what I mean?
It was a hard stop and turn, right turn into, and now it's these chords. I know what you mean.
And I think listening back, there's certain like, oh, stop, start elements. And I suppose the one sort of standout kind of quite strange thing about this song is it's got a whistle solo, which is, you know,
that's unique for the band, right?
Which they weren't big. I think is unique. I can't think of, you know, someone will jump in the comments, I'm sure, and tell me I've missed an obvious one, but I can't think of another whistle solo in Oasis.
Either. No. So all I'm thinking of, like, how many times was Oasis like one song of Guns N' Roses? You know, like I can't, if you can't think of it, then I certainly can't.
No, not off the top of my head. I'm sure there'll be a really obvious one here.
Yeah. alternate version of Wonderwall. You didn't think of that?
I think this is the only one with a whistle solo. So yeah, so there you go. It's
unique for that reason.
Yeah, and I don't mind. It's got lots of reverb on it, and I think it might even be recorded backwards. Let me see. I'm just gonna go to that. I've mentioned him earlier. David Huggins is the legend who has got the Oasis recording info site, which is the best site for anything.
Good for you, David Huggins.
He's the legend. He's the main man.
I'm while you're looking that up, I will take a moment to express my deep, like, astonishment at anybody who can figure out how to record things backwards. Like, it blows me. It blows me away to think of, like, you know, Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles and all those guys that are just like, yeah, we're going to do this. And then we're going to line it up like that. I'm like, you are? Like, it seems like so much work to just get an effect. And I mean, obviously in those cases it pays off, but it just seems like a lot of planning that maybe I don't give rock and roll musicians enough credit for how much foresight they have, because I feel like you'd have to like write it out. The way that I would have to rationalize it is you'd have to write it out and be like, okay, it's this long. So now you have to fill something that does that, but we want it to go like this kind of, or you just noodle and noodle and noodle forever and then see what fits. But that also seems like a way to madness that would drive me up the wall. The fact that we're like, oh yeah, the whistle solo might be backwards, be like, of course it is, and I can't even imagine doing that.
I don't think it's been sort of officially confirmed, actually, but yeah,
Huggins on that case.
I think it's come on, Huggins, where are you? But no, I think
where it is are just... you on this one B-side that was never played live? We have to know the whistle solo status.
I think maybe it's not backwards, but it's it was recorded forwards and then shifted backwards, or and then shifted back forwards again. You know what I mean? To make it,
yeah,
because it definitely got a backwards feel to it. But then whether
it's got some little, it's a little less than natural.
Yeah.
Right? Just a little bit.
Yeah.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary. With Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
I just love it. Like, it's such a lovely little moment. And then, but then we get all those, the big, big loud guitars and the backing vocals, and Noel really goes to town on it. And like when we first started the discussion on this, it's like, it's just so big. And he's doing all these backing vocals. You can just imagine, like, Noel, this is a B-side, mate. What, you know, do you really need to be doing like six backing vocals and eight guitar solos and a triangle or whatever that is, you know?
Just it tracks with the era. When you say it, yeah, it doesn't make sense, except knowing, and I don't know half what you know about it, but knowing what I know about the Be Here Now era, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to spend 7 days re-recording this one whistle part for this B-side because that's who we are. Like, whoa, that's who we are. Oh my god. Okay, well,
absolutely,
man.
Oh dear. Yeah, so I really like this one, and it's been really fun to sort of dig into it a little bit more and think about it. Where would you, do you think it was right to be a B-side? Could you have seen this, is there anything you would have dropped from the Be Here Now album to include this, or do you think it's right to be a B-side?
I think it's right to be a B-side because of what I said earlier, that the country vibe I'm picking up, I feel like they had in spades, and I would think better with Fade In Out.
Yeah.
So you run the risk of becoming, you know, like just a little too much. I'm sure there's probably, you know, there might be something I would cut, like a song I might swap out, but I think that would be my concern, which is whatever I swap out, I would then have to say like, well, but I can't put this next to that. And I can't put it. And if it's an, you know, if we're playing this game where it's like, well, Noel, you get one song on the album, and you're like, well, I don't know if I want to sub out that one. And even if I have two Noel songs on it, I don't want to put them back to back. You know, it's like, it all kind of like the math problem of the puzzle doesn't work out. So I think B-side's fine, especially, you know, if they're no slouch on the production of the B-side and they're going to, you know, give it their all, then it's almost an honor for, in an Oasis case, it's almost like where you want to be.
Yeah. No,
what about you? Agree. Would you swap something else?
Well, just the point you made then about having two Noel songs, or I think that's really the key. So the only Noel song on Be Here Now is Magic Pie, which is the third track. So, yeah, actually, and we haven't done a Be Here Now reassembled discussion yet, I don't think. But, yeah, given the choice out of this or Magic Pie on the album, I'd probably go this over Magic Pie.
It might be an interesting case to, like, you know, make your own playlist and swap that out. Cause I'm not the biggest fan of Magic Pie.
And it's very long. You know, this is long as well, but it's not quite as long as Magic Pie.
That's what I was going to say, was like, if you're really going to cut stuff, somehow you would cut some of the 10-minute songs down to seven and like make room for a couple more. That's the Ramones guy, everybody. It was like, yeah, your song's exactly too long.
Anything more than 2 minutes is a waste.
They average 2 minutes and 20, but sure.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I wouldn't want a second Noel song on Be Here Now. I say, I think it's right to have one Noel song an album. And when it got to the later albums and it was like four Noel songs, that's too much, you know, it's too much. But obviously it wasn't Noel's fault. Liam, I just don't think was turning up. So, so what could they do? But yeah, actually, yeah. I think swapping Magic Pie for Flashbacks, although
that's not bad.
I think that works. But then you've also got the Fame, like we were saying, and actually the Fame versus Flashbacks versus Magic Pie. Well, I'd probably put the Fame on there actually, because the Fame's got quite a, you know, I think the Fame's a bit more upbeat and a bit more.
I do too.
Pumping. And I think that might work better actually than going into Stand By Me with the next track. So
it's such a weird problem to have, where you have like a wealth of material and a wealth of talent, and everybody, so then you have to pick from those things to be like, well, I guess we have to make something of this. So yeah it's kind of impossible. And since I have no stake in it, I would definitely consider swapping out Magic Pie, just because I'm not the hugest fan of that, and I'm interested now to hear it with that, you know, just with like it, yeah, just to see, or with the Fame, or with the Fame too, you know, like that would be great. Try
A couple of other points. It was never played live. Flashbacks never played live, which was interesting. I think it would have been a nice one to have in the set, but
interesting, but not shocking. I was not surprised to learn that.
Yeah, no. So it kind of makes sense. Yeah. And and then the only other question I often ask on these Noel ones is, would you have preferred if Liam sang this one? Or do you think it kind of suits Noel's voice better?
My gut instinct is that I would definitely be interested to hear him sing it.
Yeah.
I sometimes wonder about those songs, and maybe this is what you butt into too, with that thing of like, you know, you get one per album or something, where like I feel you can tell when a guitar player writes a song that they're singing, because they have to write something they can play and sing. Whereas if you're writing something for someone just standing there and singing, then you can kind of give them almost anything and they don't have to think, oh, it's this type of G, it's that A, it's whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be interested. I'm going to vote yes, give me Liam, just because. Sure. Mostly just because, but also because I bet it would get, like, not only would it just, you know, the interesting overlay of that person's voice, but I bet the band responds differently. Like, the song responds differently because Noel doesn't have to sing. So because he doesn't have to sing, he can play a little differently, and everybody, like, operates. You know, I don't know. So that's my long-winded vote for it. Yeah, I would be interested in him singing it straight through, but I also can't help but dream about the idea of like, oh, it might like get this other vibe from it if he was there.
I get that. And an alternate version with Liam singing would probably have a bit more bite to it, rather than being, it would be a bit less Nickelback. As you,
it would definitely be less Nickelback. I know Oasis has never been accused of that, but by God, Oasis with Liam singing has absolutely never been accused of being like, this sounds like Nickelback.
Yeah. Personally, I think on a lot of them, I do think Liam would be singing better. I mean, there's some of them that it just really does my head in that Liam didn't sing them.
So I was singing along. I was having a mini Oasis in the car and playing it really loud and singing along really loud to it. Mm-hmm. And I think I realized something, and forgive me if you've already covered this, because I'm sure you've talked about Liam Gallagher's voice, but I think while he's not, like, you know, a classically quote unquote great singer, he is sort of ideally suited to get his sound above the loudness of the band. Yeah. And Noel is a very good singer, but his voice is just isn't the same. Yeah. And so I think that gives those songs, you know, Champagne Supernova and even All Around the World and those things, it gives it that level, because the rest of the guys can go enormous and be like, you're still not going to get above this. Whatever screech this, whatever version of like John Lennon, Johnny Rotten is happening over here, it is going to somehow cut through. Sure. And then it gives it another tenor.
Yeah. Cut through is definitely the phrase, I think. Cut through is it, because it's not necessarily volume, you know, and like, you know, and it doesn't have to be skill. Like in the, you know, like in the Pogues, right? I love the Pogues. And Shane McGowan is not a great singer, but when, you know, when you've got duets that he does and things like that with far better singers, I mean, the stuff he's done with the Dubliners and things. And it's like, even though when the Dubliners are singing, they're far better singers. But yeah, when Shane's voice comes in, you're just like, wow, you know, it just hits you. She's got several blasts. She had 27 masts, and they called her the Irish Rover. We had 1 million bikes of the best lawyer rights. We had 2 million barrels of stone. We had 3 million sides of our blind horses' hides. We had 4 million barrels of bones. You know, and there's something in his tone, there's something in the growl, and there's something in the whine even that just, you know, it jumps out. And it definitely, when you've got a big, you know, huge, great big song, it adds that extra sonic element, definitely.
And maybe, you know, and I don't want to just bash Noel at all, but maybe, you know, like they weren't going for that in this case. And, you know, like maybe he's better suited for those things. But then again, this is almost scientific evidence, but like, you know, you just discovered some of the lyrics in this moment. And I would almost say it's like, it's partly because his voice just sort of goes with the music. And we're like, it just goes with the music. It sounds great. It sounds fine. But when this other thing is singing, you're kind of like, oh, I heard what he snarled at me. You know, like it is, I don't know. It's that kind of, I've tried, this is something we tried to learn and unlearned during the Ramones show, was that a lot of people would say it was like, you know, well, it doesn't sound like the Ramones I want. I mean, like, you're really just kind of pigeonholing these guys. And I bet Oasis also fell into that same thing, where it's like, well, we have to, you know, we have to do exactly what the people want all the time. And it's like, that's sort of constricting. But then on the other hand, there is something you have that does connect with people. It obviously connects with people. So when it doesn't happen, you notice it. It's definitely there.
Yeah, or not there. Absolutely. All right. Well, look, let's see how Twitter's looking. I didn't. It's only been up. The poll's only been up for a couple of hours because we did this relatively short notice. So thank you for doing that, Philip.
Sure.
But so as with it having been up for a couple of hours, we are at 5 is 19%. 4 out of 5 is 25%. 3 is 43%, and 2 is 12.5%, which is quite surprising.
So we're looking at about a 3-star.
Yeah, 3-star.
I could live with that.
3.5. Yeah, 3.5. Probably that would average out.
Isn't the only complaint we've really had is that it, like, Liam wasn't singing it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of the only real one of substance. We found some lyrics that we enjoyed, and you know, it's like really, we're like, oh, it didn't have the one guy that I want. like we are owed something.
Yeah, I mean, the production's great. The lyrics are great.
Yeah.
I mean, the lyrics are great in that sort of slightly off-kilter, witty way rather than being a touches me to my soul way. And maybe people feel the need for that. You know, the 4s and 5s tend to be the it touched my soul, or it's an absolute, you know, anthem, you know, cigarettes and alcohol, or, you know, or something that rocks, you know, really rocks and would get you jumping.
Right.
Whereas this sort of mid-tempo kind of, you know, like we were saying, adult-oriented rock, kind of country rock kind of feel. It's not going to, I doubt this is many people's favorite Oasis song.
I would.
It's absolutely solid. Yeah.
I'm still interested in hearing it, like, you know, making a playlist and putting it in there in Be Here Now. But what you just described is literally what I would think a B-side is for. It was like a little bit of experimentation, take a little bit of a risk, go a little off kilter. It was like really, you know, mostly anymore, especially it was like B-sides are for fans. So what fan wouldn't like this? Here's more of the band you love. So it totally, I feel like 3, 3.5 is exactly, that's the most you could ask for. But the Oasis is the bad example because they, you know, some of their B-sides are so great. But but I feel like for most bands, a 3.5 or 3-star song is like way above the curve for your B-sides. Yeah.
Absolutely. I definitely have What was I going to say? If this had come out as the, like, you know, a track on the new Liam album or a track on the new Noel album, it would really stand out, I think. So yes. We've talked about this on the last one when we did Falling Down. It's like, you know, in any other band, in a lot of other bands, you know, this would probably be a 4 or a 5. But actually, in Oasis world, yeah, there's so many other great things. It probably maybe would be a 3. I'd give it a 4. I think it's a strong 4 for me personally. Right, let's just see. So we've had a few comments so far, not that many because I put it up relatively late. But Matt M4Tet has said, I love Noel's vocals on this. Powerful and confident, yet still has hints of vulnerability. The self-confident, cocky line of "In my well-paid opinion" contrasts with "To the days when I was lost and lonely." Love it. Yeah, very good, Matt. I think that's definitely agree with that. At RTSSRSMJ says, one of the first Oasis songs to hint at Noel's maturity and diversity as a songwriter. One of their best B-sides, in my opinion, and perhaps one of their last truly great B-sides. I wouldn't say, I mean, I think that's a really good point. I wouldn't say it was one of the first Oasis songs to hint at his maturity and diversity, because you've got stuff like "Do You Want to Be a Spaceman?" That I think has, you know, and like "Rocking Chair" and things like that, that that had sort of definitely showed that earlier on. But I think this one had showed, maybe it was more about the ability to mix it up in the recording studio. That for me is where this is really jumps out as being maybe a bit of a step forward. Up to now, most of them, even the, some of the Morning Glory stuff had been, you know, it had strings or it had synths or it had whatever. But the fact that it has got these stop-start elements and these kind of different mixtures of production and sort of psychedelic production and stuff, that to me is a bit of a step forward at this stage.
Yeah, there's a maturity, even like you'd think in the studio. You know, this is their third album, you know, third and a half or whatever you want to call it. So you've learned some things by now. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And our friend Will Buxton, who came on the last one, said, who did Falling Down with us, always been a favorite, proper bread and butter Oasis tune. So I wouldn't say it was Oasis bread and butter. I'd say, like I think it's a little bit different to be bread and butter. I'd say it's more of a, like a spicy nachos on the side.
Wow, spicy nachos. What food? I'm thinking of it is movie theater popcorn.
Oh, fair enough.
Okay. Like, I really like movie theater popcorn. I don't know if I'd have it every day.
Excellent. Good. All right. Anything else to say about it?
No, I think I've flashbacked it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've covered it.
That is, it is a very, it was really good to dig into it. I say it's really good to just sort of listen to it multiple times today. And, you know, it is one I have listened to a lot over the years. So it's not like some of them that, you know, you really have to go back in and rediscover. But I suppose, for yourself coming to it relatively recently. Yeah.
No, it took me back because, like I said, that was the first album of theirs that I bought proper. Like, it was actually wrapped, that I bought full price. And so it was nice to like kind of go back to that era a bit and expand on it and put me back in my 20s.
Wonderful. Great. All right. Well, look, thanks very much, Philip, for your time this evening.
Thank you. Yeah.
No, very much appreciate it. So where can the kids find you? And as well as the Ramones thing is finished, but you're an author as well, right?
I am. So the Ramones thing is finished, but it's still out there. You can still look up Ramones of the Day podcast. We've talked to CJ Ramone. We talked to all sorts of people. So that's fun. I'm also a writer and my book, I'm a mystery writer. As you can tell from my talk of the Ramones and Oasis, and my book, which is titled "The Murderous Haircut of the Mayor of Bel Air," Is out, available just about everywhere. You can look it up by looking up Murderous Haircut Philip, because I have a weird spelled name. I'm probably the only Philip who's written a book called Murderous Haircut of the Mayor of Bel Air. And it is about a woman who's a hairstylist, but she also has secret psychic abilities. And she uses that to touch the back of people's heads. And she can see what they're thinking. And so that helps her in the barber's chair, because she can see what the style is they want.
Okay.
And her life's going along great until one day she touches the head of a stranger customer and sees a murdered body, and therefore has to solve the murder and dig into weird LA politics.
Of course, that's where it was going. Yeah.
I feel like I threw a real left turn on this show. we were talking about Ramones, and we were talking about production value and maturing, and then I'm like, oh yeah, this psychic barber who solves mysteries in Los Angeles.
Well, you know,
like I had a stroke in the middle of the end of the show.
Yeah, that's one of those things you just picked up. Okay, psychic barber. yeah. Is that how you did it? Like the David Bowie cut up method? Yeah,
I did it like David Bowie and Beck. Yes, I just cut up words. No, I legitimately thought of it while in a barber chair, and I thought it would be great, because I don't like doing chit chat at the barbers so much. I'd just rather they just do it. And so I was thinking, like, it would be great if they just knew what image I wanted. They could just touch my head and get the image. And then I thought, I really hope I'm not thinking of anything gross when if this person turns out to be psychic and they channel my thoughts.
Yeah,
and then I thought, oh my God, what if I was psychic and I touched the head of a murderer? And then I wrote a book about it. Basically, it is kind of funny, but it's a mystery. And yeah, I think people would enjoy it.
Excellent. All right. And so Ramones of the Day podcast.
Ramones of the Day podcast. I believe it's Ramones podcast on Twitter, and I am on Twitter and Instagram at Philip Mottas. I'm sure everybody has Google and you'll have show notes.
We'll
and
link it. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to spell it. I love when people on podcasts tell you how to listen to their podcasts and stuff. Like, I'm doing it right now.
I'm just going to Google it. Yeah, yeah.
Google it.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Anyway, but yeah, brilliant. Philip, thank you very much for your time, mate. And
thank you.
Yeah, and we'll see you again very soon. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Why should I care if I have to cut my hair? I got to move with the fashion or be outcast. I know I should fight, but my old man is really alright. And I'm still living at home, even though it won't last.
So thank you very much, Philip. Much appreciated. Yeah, really good chat. And yeah, it was great to dig into flashbacks. Interesting to hear his perspective on it as someone that didn't necessarily grow up with it and just sort of heard it fairly recently. So yeah, if you would like to share your views on flashbacks, do feel free to drop over a audio message and we'll check it in next episode. Be great to hear from you. And the next one coming up is Force of Nature, which is not necessarily my favourite, but to be fair, I've listened to it back a few times recently, and I think it's probably better than I kind of give it credit for. So anyway, that will be interesting. Nothing else of note to say, just apologies for the people of Patreon that haven't yet received your latest free gift. I've got a bunch of them out, but I've still got quite a few more that I need to get in the post, so I'm going to be doing that very shortly. And yeah, nothing else interesting to say, so we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening. Most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where I post bonus episodes occasionally, and things go up early up there. And also, if you are on Patreon, it's a place to hear the Britpop Histories podcast that I'm doing. I talked about it last time. That is a brief look back at on a month-by-month basis at the moment. So we did April of 1992, and coming up very shortly is May 1992. And we're going to keep going through exactly 30 years on, and we'll keep going. So that's
the next 6 years or so sorted. But yeah, so that's really good fun. So anyway, yeah, patreon.com, you can hear that first, but then it's also available on the what was the 1001 album stream. So if you just search Britpop History, you will find it. Do feel free to email me, oasispod@gmail.com. Do follow on the socials at Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook and Oasis Pod on Instagram. Give us a review on iTunes if you can. That's always appreciated. And I think that will do it. Thanks very much again for listening. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
Anybody who knows the Ramones history knows that their fifth album was the one that they recorded with Phil Spector. And it was the one, like their biggest, it was their biggest swing. And actually, to put it in context here, it was closest to the, like the Be Here Now level, where it's like, we are going big. Mm-hmm. We want this to be huge. And similar to Be Here Now, it was not exactly as big as it was. Dissimilar to almost every single album out there.
Sorry, man.
No, it's all right.
Doc, come back.
He has lots of opinions.
What's this? Go on. No, take it back about a minute.
Yeah, sure. So the archives would be mostly scoured at this point.
I tell you what, stop. I'm going to mute myself. That's the way to do it, isn't
okay,
it?
Okay, yeah.
Right, let's try and speak now. Shh. Okay, settle. 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 Right, let me try and get in the question.
Settle is the dog term for speak.
There we go. Okay. Hear that.
This was the first time I'd heard the song before. With the X and everything. The most 90s thing with X in it.
Hold on. Let me read that.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary. With Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.